everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go.
Good morning, Chase Oaks. How are y'all doing? Good, good. I hope that you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I did. My family and I, we got to go to College Station, where my brother-in-law lives. Yeah, I got some Aggies. Where my brother-in-law lives and my sister-in-law, and hang out with them, which was so fun. If you remember the last time I was up here, I was really pregnant, and I had my baby. So my six-month-old Banks joined us in May, and so that's my family. Aren't they so cute? Oh my gosh, he's just got the squishiest little cheeks. I love him. But that's my family. My husband Jarrett was worshiping with us on bass just a second ago. And we've got a 2-year-old Branch. And then, yeah, our 6-month-old Banks. And so they're so sweet. And so as we talk about Thanksgiving, and we just came out of that, but we're also now in the Christmas spirit and the joy that just comes with that. And just reflecting on all of the wonderful blessings in life. And I think of my beautiful family, but I also think of this beautiful family here at Chase Oaks. And I love that we're taking the time to talk about things that we value, how we roll. And all of this comes from the way that Jesus lived his life and the values that he had. Because when we talk about church, it's easy for our mind to go to a building or an institution, but it's so much more than that. It's me and you. It's broken people that have chosen to follow Jesus on a mission to make him known. And so as we talk about this, we get to reflect really on the way Jesus lived life and how he has called us to live as well. So today we are going to talk about one of my favorite DNA statements, one of my favorite things that we value in Jesus' values. And it's the idea of being here for good, where in a divided and complex world, we are known by what we are for, not by what we are against. We love in unexpected ways with surprising generosity as we seek out brokenness, need, and injustice with the hope of Jesus. It's beautiful. It's good. It is awesome. And when I hear this, my mind immediately goes to a passage in the book of Matthew. And Jesus is speaking, and he's speaking in a parable. A parable is like a fancy way of talking about like a story. It's an illustration that Jesus would use to help us understand it a little bit more. And this particular parable is talking about one day when those who have chosen to follow Jesus enter into the kingdom and what that conversation might look like. And so this is what it says. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Well, then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you in sick or in prison and go to visit you?" The king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." Scripture tells us that as followers of Jesus, we will be known as followers of Jesus by the way we love one another. It's important and it's valued by Jesus, as he talks about. But I need to be honest. When I read that passage, I don't feel motivated. I feel really guilty. You see, I think about the stage of life that I'm in, how hard finances are really for all of us right now. I just kind of feel burdened by this idea that there's a lot of stuff I'm not doing. When I hear this idea of here for good, I hear more of a whisper of like, do better, do more. That's not enough. And everywhere I look, I don't have to turn on the news. I literally can just look to my left and to my right, and there is need everywhere. And I find myself asking, God, is that what you expected me to clothe everyone, to feed everyone? How am I supposed to do that? Is this the burden that you want me to bear? Is this what you have called me to? And it can lead me to one of two responses. The first is paralyzed, where I'm not motivated and I don't do anything. If I meet one need, then another one will pop up. So what's the point of even trying? But then I swing to the other side of the pendulum and I feel myself wearing the burden. And maybe if you've found yourself in a similar spot before, it can sound a little something like, well, if you want something done right, guess you got to do it yourself. I guess I'll step in it up if nobody else is going to. And we can find ourselves in this, I need to be the hero. I'll meet every need. I guess it's all on my back. It's on my shoulders. I guess that's for me. And we can walk through life just feeling burdened and guilty. And all of a sudden, a beautiful invitation feels surrounded by guilt and covered in inadequacies. But today, I believe that God has a desire to lift that burden off of our shoulders and invite us. Because after all, we've been called to live a here for good life, not a here for guilt life. And I think that this starts with recognizing what we actually have control over versus what God has control over. There's in the book in the Bible, Esther, in the Old Testament, and it does a really good job kind of talking about what we have control over versus what God has control over. It's a short book. It's about 12 chapters long, and it reads like a story, and it's really beautiful. But I do want to set it up with, sometimes we look at the Bible, and it's kind of sanitized a little bit of like, oh, look at all those like heroic people that like just did so much good and all of that. The Bible is a book of very broken people in a very broken world, much like we live in today, and how a faithful God steps in. So there are wicked and bad things that happen in Scripture. And those things, those are describing what was going on. It's not God prescribing what he expects. And the reason I say that is because there is a lot of abuse of power in the book of Esther, as we are going to see and as we're going to read. And so it's important to keep that framework of recognizing it is a broken, ugly world, but we have a faithful God who steps in to that story. So in the book of Esther, we're introduced to King Xerxes. King Xerxes is a womanizer. And when I say that, that's like being really generous. He's a bad guy. Not a fan of him. And what I mean is like literally the queen at the time, he throws this big extravagant party and he wants her to come and show off. And she says, no, good for her. And he decides, okay, well then that's it. You're banished. Like you're gone. I want nothing to do with you anymore. And his advisors, because they were also like really good people, have this idea of like, you know what we should do? We should take all of the young virgin single women from the kingdom and then we'll put them through beauty treatments, and then you can choose whichever one you like the best. Disgusting. Disgusting. And so these women, they are stripped from their homes and their families and their futures. They're taken, they go through this year's worth of beauty treatments, they have their one night with the king, and if he decides he doesn't want them, they're then secluded and sent to a separate part of the palace where they live out the rest of their lives. We are also introduced to Esther and Mordecai. Esther and Mordecai are Jews that are exiled, and they are living in Persia at the time where King Xerxes reigns. And Esther, she is a young, beautiful, single woman, and so she is one of the women that is taken by the king. Mordecai is her cousin, but has taken on a father figure role in her life since her parents passed away at a young age. And she and Mordecai both end up winning a lot of favor just in the way they live their life. They live with quite a bit of integrity. And so Esther, she's taken into the palace. She lives her life in such a way that gains the favor of the different people that she's around. So much so that even the king delights in her, and she becomes the next queen. As if there's not enough crazy going on, she's already been exiled, and then all of a sudden she's taken from her home. She's also, out of wisdom from her cousin, Mordecai, she's being silent about the fact that she's a Jew, recognizing that she's in exile and that could be pretty dangerous, and so she's not talking about that. And on top of all of that, Haman, he is the number two guy for King Xerxes, so he makes a lot of different proclamations and stuff like that. We don't like Haman, okay? Not a good dude. And he makes an edict, because Mordecai won't bow down to him and he knows that he's a Jew, to kill and annihilate all of the Jews in the kingdom, all of them. A wicked and overdramatic abuse of power.
So this is all going on, and some of Esther's attendants notice that Mordecai is in sackcloth. Sackcloth was a sign that the Jews were in mourning. That was a way that they would demonstrate it. They would take off their clothes, and they would put on sackcloth, and that is how they would mourn and how they would grieve. And so here Mordecai is, he's in sackcloth. Esther's attendants notice and let her know. And so she's like, I've got to know what's going on. What is going on with my cousin? And so she sends her attendant, Hathach, out to talk to him. And this is how Mordecai responds. Mordecai told Hathach, the attendant, to instruct Esther to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law. They be put to death, unless the king extends the gold scepter and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. So she's like, excuse me. Do you understand what you're asking me to do? I've been silent about the fact that I'm a Jew for a reason. That's already dangerous. And now you want me to go before the king, which everybody else knows, have you forgotten, is a death wish. She might be the queen, but she had no power in that space. And so she's like, I need you to be really clear about what it is that you're asking me to do. And this is how Mordecai responds. He sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. I just want us all to take a moment and envision what Esther must have been feeling in that moment. Talk about a burden on your shoulders. All of the Jews are about to be annihilated, and you are already in the palace, so why don't you go risk your life and try to save everyone? That's crazy. Like, that is a massive burden that she has to be feeling. But there's something unique to how Mordecai frames it. And I love that he does this, because he says, relief and deliverance will happen for the Jews. You see, Mordecai understood from the prophets and the different people that had heard from God that the Lord was going to restore the Jews, that they would not be in exile forever. Mordecai knew that. And so when he frames this response, he's like, listen, relief and deliverance is going to come. But what if you have an opportunity to be a part of it? After all, you're in the palace. The king could have chosen anyone and he chose you. What if you're there for such a time as this? But he recognizes that the weight of the world isn't on her shoulders. It's still on God's. And I just wonder, what if we saw opportunities to do good as just that, an opportunity, an invitation, not a burden to bear, but rather something to step into and to watch God work? And so Esther, with what I'm sure has a ton of fear, sends back this response boldly. Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. I love how Esther's response is basically, okay, I'll do my part. I recognize that I'm in a space that I can make a difference. I will do my part. But listen, I need you to be praying and I need you to be fasting, because I don't have control over what happens next. I only have control over if I step into the king and talk to him about this. That's all I can do. She recognizes where the control actually lies. And the other thing that I love is that she asks Mordecai and the other Jews in Susa to pray and fast with her and her attendants as well. Because it's hard to be here for good by yourself. We need people with us. That's why groups at Chase Oaks are so powerful. Other people that love Jesus that we get to walk life through life with are so important, because it can be hard to do good. It can be exhausting. And to have other people to spur us on and to remind us of who's in control changes everything. And so she asks them to pray and to fast for her. Because Proverbs 21:1 tells us, in the Lord's hand, the king's heart is a stream of water that he channels towards all who please him. Only God could change the king's heart. Only God had control there. And there are so many situations in all of our lives that only God has control. But Esther said yes to being here for good with what she could control, speaking up against an injustice with the platform she had, even if it cost her everything. You see, we have been called to participate in the work of restoration, but we are not responsible for it. And a here for good perspective doesn't mean, well, God's got it, he's in control, so I'm just gonna sit back and see how this goes. It's actually recognizing, oh wait, God has placed me in specific parts of the world, in my neighborhood, in my job, in my community, in my home, in my marriage, as a parent, as a friend. And in those places, I have an opportunity to be here for good. We've all been uniquely placed. But here's the relief. If we don't, God is still sovereign and he still takes care of it. But knowing that that burden is off of our shoulders, why would we want to say no to that kind of invitation? I think about a moment in my life where the Lord really let this settle in. And I had just gotten coffee with a friend and we were talking about, do we live lives interruptible to God? So if he were to pause us and be like, hey, go and talk to this person or say this, like, do we live life with space to be interrupted? And so wouldn't you have it, I'm leaving that conversation and I was like, oh no, I feel like you're about to interrupt me, God. And you know, you kind of get that like, ah, okay. And so I'm driving along the road, I'm going to get lunch with a friend, and I just had this feeling like I needed to pay for someone's lunch that day. And I didn't want to do it. So I don't really recommend this, but I decided to start arguing with the Lord, and I was like, okay, God, here we go. If you let fire rain down from heaven and make it abundantly clear of whose meal I'm supposed to pay for, I'll consider it, okay? You know? And like that piece of me is really hoping for ambiguity. Because let's be real. Being here for good and doing good things, it sounds so beautiful and like cute, but it can be weird and it can be awkward and it can cost us a bit. So I'm like, oh, come on, ambiguity. Like, let's not really know who this person's gonna be. And so I get into the restaurant and I sit down. I give my friend a heads up, and there's a mother and a daughter sitting next to us. And I could not get them out of my mind. So I was like, okay, maybe it's them. And I was still kind of holding out for hope, though, because they had sat down first. So I was like, by the time our check comes around, they might be gone, and then I wouldn't be able to pay for their meal. And so then, okay, that might work, that might work. Really reluctant, really gross. But I'm sitting there, we have our meal, the check comes, and they're still there. So I was like, okay, all right, I'm going to do it. And so I paid for their check. And it was one of those moments where when the waitress came back around, I'm like, do not look. And I could like feel the fingers like pointing at me. And I was like, oh, what was I thinking? Why didn't I say anonymous? Like why? Ugh. And so I'm just getting really uncomfortable. And then I feel like the tap, 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 tap. I was like, okay, here we go. And the mom was like, hey, did you pay for our meal? I was like, I did. And I, you know, kind of bracing for how's this gonna go? And she looks at me, and this is just so God. Tears start welling up in her eyes. She says, thank you so much. My son has been in the hospital, and money has been really tight. And I was just thinking about this mom and this daughter that they're having to eat out because they're going from the hospital to back home and back and forth, and like just how that weighs on them. And just, oh, whoa, what a cool opportunity. But it doesn't stop there. She goes, and you know, just over the past 2 weeks, 3 people have paid for our meals. 3 people? That's crazy. Can anybody in this room say within the past 2 weeks, 3 strangers have just paid for your meals? That is crazy, okay? Clearly God did not need me. He had used other people that were probably a lot quicker to say yes. I was over there reluctant. He did not need me. And he was totally going to bless this family as he already had. But you know who needed that? Me. I needed to be reminded that we serve a God who provides and protects And then I did not have to do that. I got to be a part of God blessing someone. I got to be a part of watching God change the world. How beautiful. That family didn't need me, God didn't need me, but I got to be a part of it. And I am not gonna stand up here and say I've done that every time since, because that is not true. But I do think about that story often. I don't have to, I get to. I've been invited to be a part of this. And I think about Esther, she didn't have to say yes. Relief and deliverance for the Jews would have arisen from somewhere else. But she did say yes. And now we get to be encouraged by her. We get to learn from her. She didn't have to say yes, but she got to be a part of what God was doing. The other significance when it comes to being here for good, it makes me think about Esther, right? She wasn't thinking only of herself because it was gonna put her life on the line. And I know me paying for a meal was like so similar to saving an entire population of people, right? Not even close. But when I think about Esther, she was aware of the cost. Sometimes it's a small cost like being uncomfortable, but other times it is larger. And so the other part of living a here for good life is recognizing that we've been called to live a here for good life, not a here for me life. And that's hard. In today's culture, everything is all about us. Like even our Instagram feeds and our social media, it's all wired to feed us and what we want. We walk into situations and we think about how it's going to affect us. And that's a normal and natural response, don't get me wrong. But we've been called to challenge that natural response and to respond differently. To be here for good and not here for me. There's a side story in the book of Esther that demonstrates this beautifully. And so we're gonna talk about that Haman guy that I really can't stand. He's a here for me guy through and through. And so one day he takes the moment to just brag about all of the amazing things that he has. He's like, oh, look at all my money and look at all my sons and I'm so loved and da 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 da. He even goes on to say, and guess what? Queen Esther invited just me and the king to this banquet. He doesn't know that's where he's about to get in like really big trouble, but he's bragging about it anyways. And all of that said, and then he goes on to say, but all of this gives me no satisfaction as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate. All that I have been given, none of it matters as long as that Jew Mordecai is sitting at the king's gate. He's thinking all about himself, all the things he could be grateful for. And I want to villainize him so bad and not think about how this is also me at times too. But we do this too. All of the beautiful things going on in life, and we can focus on those little things that aren't quite right. Oh, well, if I could afford that remodel or that new car, or oh, if that girl or guy noticed me, or if my boss just understood how much work I did. We all have these things within our life as well. But the story goes on, and so as he's talking about this, he's like, ah, but if it wasn't for him, he gets some really bad advice is, I guess, a good way to put it. He gets some bad advice from his wife and his friends, and they're like, well, if Mordecai bothers you so much, why don't you just have him impaled? That's just like a regular response, right? Then you can go and enjoy the banquet. It won't be a big deal. And so he's like, so smart. Okay, let's do that. And so he's going to ask for the king's permission for Mordecai to be killed. But wouldn't you have it, because God is God, and he is just so good, and I love that this is in scripture, and we get to read about it. The king can't sleep that night. I don't know if he had a nightmare or what, but he woke up, and he's like, I need a bedtime story to get me back to sleep. And so he has his attendants pull out the Chronicles. And the Chronicles were an account of different things that happened within the kingdom. Sometimes the king knew about it, sometimes he didn't, but it's just documentation. And so he's like, this will lull me back to sleep. And wouldn't you have it, what is it that they read? A story that happened a while back where there were two soldiers conspiring to kill the king, and Mordecai was present. He heard it. He was simply there, recognized injustice, recognized something that was not okay that was going on, and said something. He stepped into it, and he was here for good. So he reported it, those soldiers were killed, and the king was saved. And the king didn't even know about it until that moment when they read it. So he's like, whoa, this guy saved my life. Like, have we done anything to honor him, to thank him? And his friends were like, no. He goes, okay, well, I want to brainstorm how we can do that. He's like, I need some help. Who's out and around that can help me? And what do you know? Haman's walking in to go ask if Mordecai can be killed. So he calls Haman in, and I don't know if it was wisdom or what that kept the king from sharing who he was talking about, but he goes, what should be done for the one the king delights to honor? And so Haman's like, well, who would the king rather honor than me? So he's listing off like, oh, let's get him the nicest robe and a nice little horse and parade him around the kingdom, being like, this is what is done for the one the king delights to honor. And so he's like, oh, so excited about it. And the king commanded Haman, go at once, get the robe and the horse and do just as you've suggested for Mordecai the Jew who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything you have recommended. So Haman got the robe and the horse, and he robed Mordecai, led him on horseback through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. That's awesome. That's so good. I love the irony of this. It's so good. But all that stems from Haman was only thinking about himself to a point that as the story ends, Esther goes before the king and is gratefully received. The king is so kind to her, and all of the Jews are saved. The edict is revoked. And even furthermore, Haman goes on to take the death that he designed for Mordecai. Haman was only thinking of himself in this moment, all the different things and how he could be benefited, to the point that it ultimately led to his own death. Mordecai was not aware that one day he would be honored for such a small act of like, hey, I heard this, I just want to report it, and then it was taken care of. That he just wanted to report it. He just wanted to be here for good. And then the Lord went on so far to not only save his life and all the other Jews' lives, but also for him to be honored. We are not called to live a here for good. We are called to live a here for good life, not a here for me life. The beauty of this entire book is that where we are now matters. Here. We are here for good. Where we have been planted in our job, in our community, in our neighborhoods, in our homes. We don't often have to look for need because it's all around us. Our neighbor that just had a baby and could use a meal. A friend of ours that is a foster parent and could use a night out. There's needs all around us, and we don't have to look far. But instead of letting that burden us and weigh on our shoulders, like we have to be the hero and we have to take it all, I want to leave us with this encouragement. Andy Stanley, a pastor in Atlanta, Georgia, puts it this way. Do for one what you wish you could do for all. What if instead of feeling like we had to do everything, we ask the Lord, what's something I can do? I think about gifts for good that we're partaking in and all of the ornaments out on the trees in the lobby where we can get gifts for kids. I'm sure all of us would love to snap our fingers and give them all wonderful Christmases, but we can't afford that on our own. But what if we could do for one gift? What if we grew up and we had a really hard childhood and we don't want any kid to ever face that again? And we can't fix broken systems or broken people. But what if we could have that impact on one person's life? We have an amazing advocacy program that helps support foster families through our local Good Center. We also have incredible Kids Co, children's ministry, and student ministry. And there's an opportunity to get involved in serving the next generation if that's something that you're passionate about, if that's something that you would like to do for one. I think about the single dads and the single moms and the people that are hurting. There are so many different opportunities that we have to serve those in need. And we don't have to fix everything, but we can do for one what we wish we could do for all. Even within our own homes, as spouses, as parents, maybe you're caring for aging parents right now. maybe roommates? What does it look like to be here for good within the spaces that God has placed us in? I've thought about this with my kids, because maybe I can't get out and do the same amount of service projects I could before I had kids or anything like that, but I think about them and they can't clothe themselves, they can't feed themselves, they can't take care of themselves. And sometimes it's really hard to be here for good when your toddler's screaming because you peeled the banana wrong. But an act of patience in that moment is a way that I'm able to be here for good within my own home. I think back to that passage that we first talked about. The king will reply, "Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." As I was preparing for this message, whatever hit me a little differently. Not when you do everything, you did something for me, but whatever you did. That one meal, that one moment, watching your friend's kid, stepping in and being a listening ear for somebody that's grieving. In those moments, whatever you did for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, we did for God. The little counts, the little matters. And who knows, maybe your voice or your act of kindness will be received like Esther, and it'll have a ripple effect far beyond just one person. Or maybe it'll be one meal, one moment, one conversation. We don't have control over what happens next, but we do have an invitation to be part of the story. So for those of us that feel paralyzed, that there's so much need, how do we even step into it? I don't even want to try, because if I try, then I've already failed. Instead of feeling like you have to do it all, what is one thing? What is one way you could step in? And then for those of us that are carrying it all on our shoulders and we feel burdened, like we have to be the hero and we have to step into every situation and every need, what would it look like to recognize that there's a king that has it taken care of, that he doesn't need us? And the fact that he doesn't need us is good news, but the better news is that he desires to use us. I can speak for myself and guarantee that I am most definitely not the most efficient way to care for people. However, God delights and desires to use me, and that is an invitation I want to step into. I don't have to. So what would it look like to let God be the hero? So today, in this week, in this season, how can we be here for good? Here for now, not later. Here for change. Here for those we love and those we don't. Not because we have to, but because we were born for such a time as this. We've been invited into a life-changing perspective. And it's not about us doing everything. It's about what we do with what we've been given. Whatever you did for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Let's pray. God, thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity that we can be here for good. We get to. Not because you need us, but because you want us. You delight in us. God, I pray that as we go throughout this next week, this next month, this next year, that the burden is off of our shoulders and that we are able to see it as, what could we do for one? We can't change everything, but you are on the throne. You are in control. It's not going to come crumbling down. So what can we do for one? Lord, change our perspective in every portion of our life to be here for good, so that we can look like love to those around us. We praise you for who you are, Lord, and we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.